You're listening to Hartery Humble.
Welcome, welcome, you lovely Arkansas Razorback fans, to episode 5 of the Hard to Be Humble podcast, hosted by the humblest man on earth, Tommy Stickle. Thanks so much for joining in today, giving me a little time out of your day. Thank you. It's exciting to see the podcast numbers grow. We've got a great show for you today. We've got a football game to talk about. It was just a great weekend, you know. First weekend of college football, you know, just the whole weekend. It was fantastic. Hopefully you had an amazing Labor Day weekend. Hopefully you filled it with, you know, maybe some time with family, friends. Maybe you did some grilling. I know I made some hot dogs, some Nathan's hot dogs, y'all. It was great. Had some burgers. I have a little top secret tip that I've recently learned when you're grilling your burgers. You know, I know that there's some hardcore, really good grillers out there, so I'm truly not the best. I understand that, but I want to give you this tip. Okay, so I like to, you know, marinate my hamburger meat, get it really good. Of course, you got to use Worcestershire sauce. There we go. Thank you. You know, of course, you put some of that in there. You know, you put some garlic, you put your salt, you put your pepper, you put all the good stuff. But one thing that I've started to add that I really like putting in my burgers is actually some panko breadcrumbs. Now, you might think that's weird, but I actually made some meatballs, and you put a lot of panko crumbs in meatballs, but it kind of does a good job at holding the meatball together. And I kind of have had a problem of, you know, sometimes you're flipping your burgers and they kind of fall apart. Anyways, add a little bit of breadcrumbs to your hamburger meat. You don't taste a difference, I promise you. It's just a great little tip. So, barbecue tip. Hey, who knew you were going to get that today? So, hopefully you had a great time eating. You know, we got a game. I will say, you know, I don't think it was a particularly enjoyable game that we got. But, hey, the Hogs played. The Hogs got a W. Can't complain too much. Of course we can dissect it. And, of course, we will. We'll do a whole game recap for y'all. But I will give you my opinions. And y'all can take them all with a grain of salt. I'm just me. Y'all have your opinions too. And I, of course, want to hear what you think, hear your thoughts and reactions. I got a few people who've kind of started to give me feedback outside of my immediate inner circle, which I'm really excited about. Actually met a recent, what do you call that? Expatriate? Is that the term? A person who recently moved from Arkansas to where I was. I met him on Saturday at a kid's playground. He's from, you know, 30 minutes down the road from where I'm from, and he just moved. So that was awesome. Hopefully he's listening. Got a great show for y'all today, and hope you enjoy. All right, so let's get into a recap of the Portland State game. So first off, had to dig a little bit for this information. I hadn't really seen it published yet, but USA Today actually posts this for almost every single football game they can get their hands on. But Arkansas actually paid $550,000 to Portland State to get them to come play a game against us. So, you know, that's not too bad. There's a lot of schools that are paying a lot more than that. I know this is just an FCS school, but still not terrible. Better than what Tennessee just did, where I think they paid $950,000 for Georgia State to come and embarrass them at home. So you hate beating people while they're down, but you know, it's Tennessee. It's okay. And, you know, it was nice to see Mizzou lose, you know, on the road. I'm always a fan of Mizzou losing, or Missouri. Just, yeah, they can just lose all they want. It won't bother me at all. I'll just sit here and love it. South Carolina lost to North Carolina. And, of course, you know, Memphis. I don't really even want to call it an upset to Ole Miss. Ole Miss is just really, you know, probably in a little bit worse shape than we are. Potentially, they have new coordinators this year. New young QB. I don't know. You know, I don't even think it was an upset. You know, I know Memphis was favored, so good for them. Memphis did what they were supposed to do. Beat beat a kind of regional rival, and hey, good for them. But it was a great opening weekend of college football, a lot of fun. So, of course, Arkansas enters this game without our stud returning senior tight end, C.J. O'Grady. So, Portland State has never played an SEC opponent, so we are their first taste of what an SEC team looks like. I actually think Portland State beat North Texas last year, who absolutely embarrassed us at home. So, Portland State's just, they're not a terrible team. I mean, obviously we should beat them and we should have beat them easily. We didn't. But Portland State's not just pure garbage. So don't think of them that way. They do have some fight in them, as we saw in the game. So I think a lot of fans entered this game, you know, very cautiously optimistic about what we'd see. I think we all expected to see some competency from the quarterbacks, see them complete some throws that we didn't complete last year, see the offense just have better rhythm overall. I think that that's kind of how fans were entering the game. I know they were excited about seeing the new grass field. I know we have the red end zones now. I actually wish the red end zones were fully red. They kind of have still a grass border around it. I don't know if that was temporary or permanent, but fill in the whole thing. Look at LSU's field. Look at how they do it. Do it like that. Fill in the whole end zone with red, and Tommy will be happy. So let's get into the game. What happened? What the drives look like? I'm going to give kind of a full recap of it. I rewatched the game myself, and I just think this is kind of cool to sometimes sit back and kind of hear or go back through the game and what the drives look like. I think that when you think back to the game, you remember only key drives from it or certain aspects of it, and sometimes it matches with reality, but sometimes it doesn't. So I'm going to go through. I wrote it all out. I looked at each drive of each team, and we'll just talk about it and see what happened and what maybe led to, you know, if we had to punt or what was the success there, all that good stuff. So Portland State starts their first drive off with some QB runs, some QB scrambles. You know, they have some design plays. Anyways, they kind of eat some chunks of yardage up. They're moving the ball a little bit, but ultimately our defense is able to kind of lock down eventually and hold them to a 50-yard field goal attempt, which their kicker, all credit to him, nails the field goal. So Portland State starts the game going up 3-0. In Arkansas's first drive, as expected, Ben Hicks trots out onto the field full of confidence. He's the guy. But I think that, as you know, if you know how the game unfolds, something sits in the back of his head while he's playing, and I think that it holds him back. So Ben Hicks starts out the drive and quickly gets called upon to convert a third down situation, which it was a third and kind of medium. And he was forced to move in the pocket a little bit. Maybe you remember the exact play. And he made a nice completion to Traylon Burks out to his right. And when that happened, I immediately texted my group of close friends that I text with during the game. And I was like, that looked like a play that we would not have converted last year. There was just something kind of special about it. He moved in the pocket, made a nice throw. We converted a third down. It felt good. On the drive, Rakeem Boyd is just showing some nice burst. He's not getting huge chunks of yards, but he's eating significant chunks of yards with every run. Maybe five, maybe a little bit more. Every single run, he's just looking dangerous and looking good. Arkansas is doing a great job at kind of moving the ball, and we get down to Portland State's 20-yard line, and Mike Woods actually has a great opportunity from a short pass. It looks like he could have a good chance of scoring the TD from 20 yards out, but he kind of stumbled and fell. He'd already kind of beat the defender there, so definitely a missed opportunity for a TD on that play. Later on, Hicks takes a shot, and I honestly think it was a nice shot to Grayson Gunner in the end zone, kind of over the middle. And it was a very catchable ball, looked good. I think the defender made a nice play on that ball. And we weren't able to convert the third down there, score a touchdown. So Connor Limpert is forced to kick a 34-yard field goal. So the game is tied up, 3-3. On Portland State's second drive of the game, they start out by going backward promptly with a delay game penalty, and the drive goes absolutely nowhere, and the Hogs defense is showing really nice pressure on blitzes, and to be honest, to me, I am no football expert, but the defense does not look vanilla to me. To me, a vanilla defense means only a set number of guys are making plays in the backfield, but as you'll see throughout the game, we have safeties making plays in the backfield. We have guys all over the field who are blitzing, and that's not vanilla. I mean, maybe there's times that you might critique that, but hey, I liked what we saw from the defense, and this series was definitely a success for Arkansas's D. And On the ensuing Arkansas drive, Boyd again gets fed the ball and is eating up nice chunks of yards. After an incomplete pass and a stuffed Chase Hayden run, Arkansas found itself in a 3rd and 9, and Ben Hicks was able to barely squeeze a pass from the far hash to Tyson Morris on a corner route. Hopefully you remember this play. The defender, I mean, it almost looked like it was an interception, but hey, the defender didn't get it. Tyson Morris made a great play. And I was really happy because they didn't really show any great angles on TV, but I honestly think Tyson Morris did not land inbounds, but we ran a quick play, so it didn't matter. Arkansas then gets a nice 17-yard pickup from a reverse sweep to Devion Warren. And after a completion to Grayson Gunner, the Hogs pound it in the end zone from a yard out. Devwall Whaley, TD. Hogs go up 10-3, feeling good. On Portland State's third drive, the Hogs show really good pressure from their D-line, and the Vikings are able to string together some good plays, though, to get to Arkansas's 40-yard line. On a 3rd and 3 play, they try a little toss sweep to the outside, but our cornerback, Busta Brown, who made, I think, my favorite defensive play of the game, read it, and I mean, he laid a hit on the running back, knocking him out of bounds about a yard shy, and it was one of those statement hits. It felt good. Busta, he just full out dead sprint. You know, the running back was stretching for that first down marker, diving, and Busta just smacked him out of bounds a yard shy. It was sweet. So the Vikings then go for it on 4th and about 1.5, and they are just barely able to convert it via a QB scramble that kind of runs all over the place, and you know the QB dives out of bounds and just barely gets it. So the quarter ends with Arkansas up 10-3. After the quarter opens back up, the drive stalls after a break, and the Vikings are held to a 47-yard field goal, which, of course, the field goal kicker makes. So the game, Hogs still lead 10-6. On Arkansas's next possession, we promptly go 3 and out due to a well-thrown ball that Trey Knox dropped. So very disappointing for that. I was texting some friends who aren't quite as savvy about Arkansas's current players or the freshmen we brought in, and I was like, just watch. Treylon Burks, Trey Knox, they're going to impress you today. And after Trey Knox dropped that, he goes, who was going to impress me? So yeah, definitely disappointed there. Forced to punt. On the Vikings' next possession, though, they are forced into a 3rd and long, which they're able to convert, again, as the story goes for this game, after a crazy QB scramble and a dive out of bounds where a defender dove and hit him late out of bounds. At this point, Portland State's QB is pretty much run ragged already, and it's only the beginning of the second quarter, and he's just absolutely beat up. And after that play, they're really unable to gain any more yards in the drive and are forced to punt. And, of course, that sails in the end zone, which is always a nice thing to see. So you can just tell that, you know, when you pressure the QB, they can sometimes make great plays on you. But in this game specifically, you can tell that our pressure really took a toll on the opposing QB. So in our 4th drive, Hicks is able to make a nice completion to tight end Chase Harrell after being forced to move around the pocket a little bit. Of course, we love seeing that. And then on a 3rd and 6 play at the 50-yard line, though, Hicks throws a completion to Chase Hayden out of the backfield, but Hayden is unfortunately only able to get 4 yards when he needs 6. And so on 4th and 2, Ben Hicks keeps the ball and is able to run around the edge for a pickup of 10 yards, which was awesome to see. Then the drive kind of has some problems, and after 2 incompletions, Hicks is then sacked after a DT defensive tackle stunt kind of gets our right guard, Myron Cunningham, kind of confuses them. They don't block it well. Really not much Ben Hicks could have done on that one, so we were forced to punt. Disappointing because we were moving the ball pretty well, especially after getting that nice 4th down conversion, but didn't do much with that 4th drive. So the Vikings received the ball for their 5th possession, and they go absolutely nowhere on their first 2 plays in the next drive. Alexander, the QB, then throws a long ball, which our safety Cameron Curls reads perfectly, intercepts it, and runs it back to their 20-yard line. The fans are going crazy. The place is absolutely going insane. You know, we feel that momentum. You know, at this point, we kind of starting to feel that pressure. Like, hey, shouldn't we have scored more points? It was just kind of a weird game up to this point. It seemed like the drives were eating up a lot of time. There was a few key mistakes that kept points off the board. It was just kind of weird. But at this moment, things felt really good. And then for some reason, Nick Starkle gets placed into the game. Ben Hicks is pulled, and there's 2 minutes and 30 seconds left in the half, and the first play Nick Starkle has, he hands off to Rakeem Boyd for a nice run. Starkle then completes a short pass to tight end Grayson Gunner for a negative play. So I think he's kind of starting to feel that little pressure at this point. He's in the game. He's really wanting to make a statement. And then he throws a really, really ugly pick straight to the Mike linebacker on the 5 yard line. You know, we were close to scoring. And honestly, some people I think were saying that the referee was in the way and maybe blocked his vision. But there was another defender right there too that probably would have picked it had that defender not been there. So I don't know what Starkle was seeing there. It was just an ugly pick. No way around it. And you can just tell that the air is gone out of the stadium. It was a really defeating moment and definitely leads one to question why in the world we put Nick Starkle in that series. Later on in the post-game press conference, Morris said that he entered the game knowing that he wanted to give Starkle a chance in a pressure situation to shine and to actually play a little bit this game. So I understand that's what he's thinking, but at that point of the game, 10-6, I guess he felt that the momentum was going for us and that was a good time to shift. But I really think that pretty much from this point on, the game's just different, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So with 1:20 left in the half, the Vikings get 20 yards from a nice running back draw play, and then the drive stalls after a short completion, a QB hurry, and a sack with 44 seconds left in the half. So the Hogs have another chance for one last drive of the half, and they start from their own 36 yards, and they got 34 seconds to get down the field. And Starkle then I don't know if he totally redeems himself, but he throws a beautiful pass on a rope to Trey Knox for 36 yards. It was definitely the best pass play of the day. And again, crowd's kind of feeling it at that point. It felt good. Nice completion. Trey Knox looked good. Starkle then completes another 10-yard completion to Grayson Gunner, but he was unable to get out of bounds, so the Hogs are really under the pressure to get another play. And instead of clocking the ball, Starkle throws a little short completion to Rakeem Boyd out of the backfield, and Rakeem isn't able to get out of bounds before the clock gets to zero. So very, very disappointing way to end the half. Felt totally wrong. Just felt like the Hogs really messed up there. We should have gotten a field goal, no doubt about it. Hogs go into half leading 10-6. Not a great feeling. You can tell that the reporter who interviews Morris, you can tell Morris is just frustrated. He just doesn't feel confident. You can just tell he doesn't instill confidence in the fans like a lot of coaches can. He just feels that interview, you can tell something about that just really, really shook him. And later on in the press conference, he reveals that he was doing the signal to clock the ball. And there's actually footage of this that you can find online. But I don't know what the mix-up was, but I guess the offensive coordinator was doing the run the same play motion. And so you see some guys on the sideline. You see Morris, you know, doing the clock the ball motion, you know, like throwing the ball on the ground. And then you see everyone else on the sideline doing this like crazy air guitar move, which I guess is do the same play again. So, yeah, it was kind of a funny scene. But again, it just, you know, you want your head coach to be in control. You want him to, you just want him to be in control. And that was one moment that it just makes you believe that, is this moment too big for him? Is he cut out for this head coaching thing? Now we go into the half. The Hogs receive the kick after the half and start their drive from the 35-yard line because Portland State kicked it out of bounds and got a penalty for that. And on the first play, right after half, left guard Austin Capps is called for holding. And after a 5-yard run from Rakeem Boyd, Hicks completes a nice pass to Traylon Burks over the middle for 20 yards, overcoming the holding penalty, which felt great. You can almost tell that Hicks, you know, reflecting on his first half, probably felt like he didn't take a lot of shots downfield. So the next play, he launches a bomb down the field to Traylon, who is unable to beat one-on-one coverage and haul it in. It probably wasn't a perfectly thrown ball bomb down the field, but you kind of get the feeling that you wish, you know, our wide receiver could have fought through that coverage and had made that play for Ben Hicks. You know, it was just a smidge underthrown, so Traylon kind of had adjust to it on the inside versus his outside. So probably if it was thrown just picture perfect, it could have been a completion, but still, it almost feels like Treylon could have done a little bit more, which was disappointing. And then Chase Harrell then drops a really nicely thrown ball that would have converted the downs again, and Arkansas is forced to punt. So I'm sure, you know, at this point, Hog fans are just really not feeling great, you know, after that Chase Harrell drop. You know, I think a lot of blame even might be feeling, you know, might be going to Ben Hicks too. And in my opinion, he threw two balls that should have been or very likely could have been completed. So I don't put this drive's failure on him. Portland State then starts their first drive of the half and string together some positive plays. But ultimately, they do a chop block, which forces them into a 3rd and 12, which Arkansas defends well and forces them into a punt. So in the Hogs' next possession of the half, their second one, they start from their own 44. And Rakeem Boyd makes a really, really nice play, making three defenders miss after a short pass out of the backfield. This is probably one of my favorite plays of the game. Of course, y'all know I love Rakeem Boyd. He's one of my Razorbacks, Razorback X's and O's. But still, he just looks so dangerous, man. Every time he touches it, he's looking good. So I love this. The crowd just cheered its approval. They're loving it. Again, after a 5-yard rush by Rakeem Boyd, there's another incomplete shot down the field to Tyson Morris, and the Hogs have a running back screen set up beautifully on a 3rd down, but Hicks lobbed it just a little bit too high, and Rakeem Boyd was kind of had it just in air and jump, and he really wasn't able to haul it in, but you just know had he caught that, oh yeah, it would have gone a long ways, and it was a tough one to see. That one I would definitely put on Ben Hicks, though. He could have thrown the ball a little bit better, put a better touch on it, but on the ensuing punt, the Hogs were yet again unable to pin the Vikings inside the 5-yard line due to the punt coverage, not catching the ball or not stopping the ball. That felt like another story from the game. There were two instances of that where you really wish we could have downed the ball, pinning them deep, that we kind of let it through our grasp there, and it just didn't feel good. On Portland State's very next play, they take a shot downfield, and Jarquez McClellan makes a really nice interception on the run, just full speed, great catch. And that really was another moment that felt like, man, the momentum was getting a little bit back in the Hogs' favor. This felt good. You know, there's it's been kind of an up and down momentum game, and that interception was great. I loved his reaction to the interception. He immediately ran to the sidelines. It was given literally like ball boys and water boys and girls high fives and stuff. He grabbed the turnover belt, you know, motioned to the crowd. I like from defense seeing that element of swagger or that element of confidence. When you make a great play, it's okay to do that. Now there's some limits there. I don't like it when you're getting smoked by a team and then you kind of showboat after you make one good play. It's like, dude, you're losing. You should probably not showboat. But there are times that it's acceptable, and I do think that a defense showing some swagger when they make a good play is nice to see. When I think of Bobby Petrino years, that's what I always remember of his defenses. They weren't great, but they played with attitude, and I liked it. So the Hogs start their next drive and their next series with a loss of 3 yards after a misread on an option goes to a running back instead of being kept. It seemed like for some odd reason, our quarterback was having a hard time. Ben Hicks was having a hard time of diagnosing what to do in these RPO situations that pretty much are RPO 101, the most basic concept. You know, you leave a defensive end, a rusher free to read, and he's not reading it correctly because that guy keeps tackling our running back in the backfield. So after that, there's an incompletion, and on a 3rd and long, Ben Hicks lobs up a pass, and y'all probably remember this one where Mike Woods is just kind of able to track it down. It seemed like he was just kind of floated up into a group of people. Mike Woods was kind of running in the area. He leapt up, grabbed it, and made a great catch for a key conversion for us. Mike Woods then catches another short pass and breaks a Viking defender's ankles on a juke move for a nice catch and run for 11 yards. That's my second favorite play of the day. My first was Rakeem's making three defenders miss pass out of the backfield. This was my second because Mike Woods absolutely broke some ankles. It was great. Actually, the defender kind of slipped on the grass, but hey, I'm calling it broken ankles. It was sweet. Later on in the drive, Rakeem Boyd wills himself through a crowd of people to convert a 4th-and-1 from the 36-yard line. He then breaks a 15-yard run after a face mask penalty that almost goes for a touchdown. Just kind of a blocked DB was just able to trip him up at the last minute. And thankfully, Boyd was able to punch it into the end zone 2 plays later, so all was made right. It was cool. Always love seeing Rakeem Boyd get his touchdowns. We love Rakeem Boyd. Hogs now lead 17-6 with 2 minutes and 26 seconds left in the third. On the Vikings' next possession, the QB is forced out of the pocket each play. The first, he is able to throw away. The second, Hayden Henry just gets shot out of a cannon and sacks him. And on the third play, he gets dragged down before making the first down marker, and he's knocked out of the game. The dude's run ragged. He, you know, I don't know if he's hurt. I think he landed on his shoulder funny, probably popped it out of his socket, but give the dude props for playing hard, playing a hard game. But man, he was running for his life all game. I don't feel sorry for him, but eesh, man. We did a good job getting after the QB. So Arkansas begins its next drive on their own 30 after the punt. And after a couple rushing plays, the quarter ends with the Hogs up 17-6. Devion Warren then has a couple nice runs from a sweep play. We actually had some nice success, it seemed like. I don't know if it was the exact same play that we kept running, but Devion Warren showed some nice little speed around the edge, and we definitely had success there. Hopefully we see more of that in the future. Hicks then makes a nice 20-yard completion to Treylon Burks after having all day to throw in the pocket. Promptly, Chase Harrell then drops another pass, sure to be a big gain, which is disappointing. And it's pretty clear he's had a few big drops this game. In the press, in the post-game press conference, it is made clear, though, that you know, even though he did drop some key passes, he contributed a lot to the run game. And I definitely think he'll have better games. I'm not giving up at all on that player. I think he's going to have a really nice season, important player for us this year. But we'd love to see him get those drop balls cleaned up. So unfortunately, the drive ultimately stalls on the 7-yard line, and Connor Limpert hits a really easy chip shot 25-yard field goal right down the middle, and Arkansas goes up 20-6 with 10 minutes 44 seconds left in the game. So a new QB for Portland State enters the game and really gets bailed out on a third down after back-to-back offside penalties by defensive tackles Jonathan Marshall and Marcus Miller. This series is absolutely brutal, full of penalties, full of mistakes on both sides of the ball. It's just a terrible series. After, you know, the third down completion due to the offside penalties, there's offsetting penalties of intentional grounding and offsides by Jamario Bell. And later, the Vikings are called for an illegal block, backing them up to a 2nd-and-16. And after more penalties and sloppy play, PSU has a 4th-and-4 from Arkansas's 35. They are able to hit a quick slant to barely get the first. They then again get in another 4th-down situation, needing 13 yards, and we bring a really heavy blitz and force the QB to scramble. He's running all over the place, runs to his left, and he just lobs up a prayer. And y'all remember the play. It barely goes over kind of the outstretched leaping hand of our safety and is caught by Portland State's best player, their tight end. And, you know, there's defenders all around it. It's just one of those just really irritating plays where we had the QB running for his life. Hey, players make plays, so I guess that's the end of the day. And, of course, they get into the end zone with 4 minutes and 14 seconds remaining, and the score is now 20-13, and Hogs fans are sweating. So we start our next drive knowing we really need to ice this game away. You know, don't give Portland State another chance. And we, of course, started out with a pass and then also a run by Rakeem Boyd. He then is able to rip a really nice 24-yard run, and he hurdles a defender at the end of it as he's going out of bounds, which I absolutely love. You know, anytime Rakeem can jump over a defender, it's a good game. He goes up to 114 rushing yards at this point. Beautiful play. A few plays later, though, while trying to ice the game, Devwall Whaley fumbles. Yeah, not something you want to see from your senior running back. But luckily, Arkansas has a guy right there and is able to recover the ball quickly. So with a minute and 11 seconds left, Morris elects to pin Portland State deep instead of attempting a 52-yard field goal, which I think was the right move there. The punt team is able to finally pin the ball deep. They fair catch it, and you know Portland State's gotta go 95 or 97 yards, you know, with very short, a minute and 11 left in the game. So in their last drive of the game, they attempt a deep ball out of the end zone, and Jarquez McClellan is called for pass interference, so that gets them out of trouble there. After two short gains, PSU clocks the ball with 22 seconds left, and then they attempt a deep pass down the middle, and to be honest, it was a little bit behind the receiver. He probably could have caught it if it was thrown a little bit better, but it gets tipped and intercepted by Joe Fouché, ending the game. Arkansas wins 20-13. Woo pig. So that's the game recap. Went through every single drive, talked about the highlights there. Already kind of told y'all what my favorite plays of the game were. They were definitely Rakeem Boyd's 12 yards reception where he made three defenders just look silly. And then the Mike Woods one where he broke the defender's ankles. Great plays. My favorite defensive play was Buster Brown's just smash out of bounds. That was sweet kind of at the beginning of the game. So overall, now let's talk about some of my general just takeaways, my, you know, what troubles me, what I learned. So let's start with what I liked.
Tommy likey. Tommy want wingy.
So one thing that was really encouraging for me to see was special teams play. I was really happy with our kicking game. I think Connor Limpert is very under the radar, sneaky good. He's one of our best kickers we ever had, and I had no idea he was. I don't know why. I think it's because when he misses bad, but ultimately he's one of our most accurate kickers we've ever had. So Connor Limpert's got that down. It's his senior season. I'm feeling good about him, and our punting game was absolutely atrocious last year. And our new punter that we brought in, I can't remember his first name. Last name is Loy. You know, I just felt like our punt game was much, much, much improved from last year. We should have pinned him deep a few times. Our punt coverage was a little bit suspect. We could have got the ball, but hey, we'll let him go. Overall, I'm really pleased with the improvements our special teams have made. I know that our tight ends coach, Barry Lunney, is officially the special teams coach now alongside his tight end duty. So I think that, I guess you would call it promotion, that coach, his coaching on those teams has really helped, and you can kind of see it. Hopefully against Ole Miss, we'll get some more opportunities to showcase maybe some returns. Treylon Burks looked kind of dangerous with a few punt returns he has. He kind of came up a little gimpy in one return where it almost looks like he hurt his leg. I don't know if that was the same leg that he hurt his senior season last year, but seems okay. I think he'll play, but I wouldn't be shocked if we see a different player back there for punt returns. Another thing I really liked from the game, our secondary play, our cornerbacks and our safeties. Obviously, we had, you know, three interceptions, but our DBs and our safeties actually got some sacks. They were actually in the backfield a few times making plays. Just very encouraging. I feel like that's been a very weak point for our teams, especially last year, just going back, you know, years and years. We just haven't had great safeties recently, and I feel like Cameron Curl might be one that goes down in the books as a great, great defensive back for us. He was named for Pro Football Focus SEC Player of the Week for his performance on defense, so that's always great. Sosa Aguin was actually the defensive tackle they chose for the SEC. He didn't really, in my opinion, have a great game. I guess, you know, he was fine, but anyways, they chose him too. But I'm very proud of Cameron Curl and what he was able to do with the secondary play. So what did I absolutely cringe at? What was the cringe-worthy moments from the game?
You gotta be beeping me! What are you doing? That is so bad, that is absolutely brutal!
The biggest thing was the mismanaged clock at the end of the half. That drives me nuts. That should drive me nuts. That fully goes on the coach. There's not a single excuse he can make for that. And of course, after the game, Coach Moore said it was his fault. So I'm going to place it on him, as I should. He's taking blame for it. There's no other person to blame for that. It's very easy to coach managing the clock right. There's no excuse for that. Hated seeing that. Also, little mistakes like the drop balls. It was just a lot of small things that added up to a close game. And you just wish that could have been a little bit cleaner. It's a relatively young team, though, so we're going to have a lot of those mistakes. We're going to lose some games this season due to those types of things. It's just going to happen, but hopefully we see a lot of good positives as well. So what's kind of the story of this game? Why was it important? Why did it matter? You know, what's the takeaway here? And for me, this team is young, but our defense is better. And our offense has to gel very soon. I think that Ben Hicks came into this game not feeling like he was the guy. You know, through our fall camp, they kept switching QBs. You know, he didn't have his guys to gel with. And I think when you come in knowing there's a guy right behind you, you come into a game thinking, I better not make a mistake. And when you're thinking about not making a mistake, you will always make a mistake and just not play good. And you could just see it. It seemed like in the second half, Ben Hicks almost got a little bit more confidence after Starkle kind of screwed up a lot, and he felt more confident, and you saw him taking more shots downfield. That's what we need. We need our QB feeling confident. We need our QB to take charge of the offense. He needs to say, this is my offense. This needs to be Ben Hicks' offense. It doesn't need to be Chad Morris's offense. This needs to be Ben Hicks' offense. He needs to take charge. He needs to be the man. And our coaches need to make him feel confident in that position. And man, if he can come out against Ole Miss and make some confident looking throws and take charge, I'm going to be a happy man. Y'all hear that music? Oh yeah. You know what segment's coming up next. We got a little Razorback X's and O's for you. Oh yeah. And y'all know how amazing Rakeem Boyd's performance was on Saturday. Come on. The dude led the team MVP. We love Rakeem Boyd. You better believe this guy was over watching that game. Just, oh, I was so pumped for Rakeem Boyd. Man, he had some great plays. Let's see here. Let's look at his stat line. He rushed for 114 yards, baby. Always awesome to get over 100. He had a TD. He had 3 catches on 4 targets for 22 yards. The dude was a beast. He looked dangerous almost every time he touched the ball. There was one play, probably my favorite play of the game, and this is probably my Rakeem Boyd love and my homerism coming out here, but I honestly think my favorite play of the game was a little short pass that Ben Hicks threw to him out of the backfield. A defender almost intercepted it for a pick 6, but hey, it got by him, and Rakeem Boyd caught the ball, made 3 defenders miss, made them look silly before he was tackled for about a 12-yard gain. Man, we love Rakeem Boyd over here. I'm so excited about that dude. He's going to have a great season. We just have our fingers crossed. I don't even want to speak it into the air, so I'm not. He's going to have a great season. And I think this next week against Ole Miss, he's going to bring it, and it's going to be sweet. So y'all keep an eye on number 5. That's a special number for the Razorbacks. Y'all know what I'm talking about. And I think he's going to add to the legacy of that number with another great player in our history. And sheesh, man. If we get one more year out of Rakeem, I mean, that probably means he got hurt, which is bad, but man, that would be amazing. But I really feel like by the end of the year, he's going to the draft. So enjoy him while we got him. We love Rakeem. Thank you, Rakeem. We love you, man. And our other Razorback that we love this year is Matteo Soli. Now, I don't think he made any big-time plays in this first game. This was his first game ever in a Razorback jersey, number 11, if you're curious about what number he is. He definitely got some snaps. He actually got 1 tackle. He tackled the QB at the very end of the game on one of the plays where he was kind of scrambling. I think it was 2 plays before he threw the game-ending interception. But anyways, Matteo Soli, trust me, guys, we love this kid. He's going to be good. He's a beast. And let me tell you why he's a beast. Heard this story after the game. Didn't even realize it while I was watching the game. Apparently, when he tackled the guy, the QB, somehow he fractured something in his hand. Didn't come out of the game. He just kept on playing, man. This dude's a beast, I'm telling you. And so he's going to play next week against Ole Miss. You better believe it. We need, you know, after the Dorian Gerald injury, we need him. You know, he's probably going to get some more snaps because of that. And he's going to be wearing a club. On, I think it's his right hand, so, you know, not only is his number 11, but he probably has that club, and he's going to look awesome. Hopefully, he smacks some dudes with that club. That's what I'm hoping for. But, man, had a nice week. You know, Matteo, of course, could have maybe got a sack or something to get us a little more pumped, but, hey, he's starting small. I knew that he wasn't going to be a guy that immediately comes out, you know, and just get 6 sacks or something insane like that. He's growing, but we're going to keep watching him throughout the year. And man, we love him. We're rooting for you. Rakim and Matteo, we love you.
Hello.
Chad, how's it going, man?
Hey, Tommy Stick, I'm doing great. How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing well. What's new in your world today?
Great Labor Day weekend. Got to watch some college football, always good. But now it's back to work, Tom. The 6 weeks are over. I got to see if I remember how to be an adult and work again.
Oh, no. So, guarantee if you have any kind of password that you have to log into your computer at work with, you've forgotten it. No chance you remember that thing.
No chance. Yeah. No chance.
That's my least favorite thing about missing time.
Spend half my day doing that.
Exactly. It's terrible. You have to remember all those. Do you have a system at work where it resets your password like every 4 weeks or every so often? Because that's what mine. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. Luckily, there's a single sign-on for most of them. So it's supposed to remember them.
Well, what'd you think of them Razorbacks this weekend? I'm sure you weren't thrilled.
Man, you know, I was underwhelmed, obviously, like everybody else. But at the same time, I'm not trying to overreact. I feel like last year I overreacted a little bit and got a little too excited after we had the big blowout win. So it's just one game. Nothing to get excited about for next week. But I mean, it's just so easy to overreact. The older I get, Tommy, with this words of wisdom here, is just, you know, take it 1 week at a time. So just trying to take it as it comes.
That's right. A different team shows up every week, you know. You could have a really great game and a really a totally different team will show up next week. It just happens in college football. So,
no.
You know.
I'm 30. You know, we're in our 30s, and, like, you think about it, these kids are, like, still teenagers, some of them, right? And like in their early 20s. So
you
never know what these kids are going to do. It just makes me feel really old. So.
And I've started following a lot of them on Instagram and stuff just to kind of, you know, stay in the loop of what's happening there. And I'm telling you, they act younger and younger, or I'm just getting older and older or something. But yeah, you can definitely tell when you follow them on social media. They're not full-grown, in-the-workforce adults with the same filters that we quickly get when we work alongside people and can get fired from a job. But, you know, this week against Ole Miss, that'll be the test. Depending on how we show up, I feel like, you know, we can make some better judgments, I think, off this game. You know, in SEC defense and SEC offense, I don't know. We'll see. Well, all right. Hey. I've got a special, extra special question to kick off our little talk today. So I want to ask you just kind of a this or that type question. So right now, like no strings attached, just right now, if you could swap Chad Morris out with another coach, I want to know if you'd do it. So I have a few coaches I've listed out here, and I want you to tell me just straight up, maybe if you have some reasons why or why not, if you would straight up swap out Coach Morris for one of these guys. All right.
One popped in my head, and it's probably completely not popular at all, but I'll see if it's one of them. I'm curious if it is.
Okay. If not, circle back. I definitely want to hear your thoughts there. So we'll start with the coach that we couldn't remember his name last podcast, Mike Norvell for Memphis.
Oh, 100%. 100% would swap Mike Norvell out with Chad Morris. I know that's maybe a bit harsh on Chad. He hasn't necessarily given us everything that he has, but look what he's doing in Memphis. I know it's just obviously a big week one win against Ole Miss, but, you know, I'm not an expert on everything he's done, but, yeah, I'd swap him out. I'd swap him out today, yesterday.
Nice. Well, I wonder, it seemed like he was the main guy or one of the lead candidates alongside Morris. So it'll be really interesting to watch those two guys' careers unfold, because we'll either really kick ourselves or, hey, who knows. I do think Norvell will probably get some kind of Power 5 job at the end of this season, maybe in the SEC, depending on what opens up. It'd be really interesting to see if it's Ole Miss. I feel like there's a chance of that.
Yeah, well, for what it's worth, too, let me just lay the groundwork here for my expert opinion. I was really mad when we didn't get Charlie Strong when he went to Texas. So obviously dodged a bullet, but it looks like we hit with another bullet, but it's okay.
All right, well, next coach, we're going to go just Mr. Popularity, Mike Leach.
Mike Leach, so much charisma. Look what he's done at Washington State. I mean, if you follow him on Twitter, like, what's there not to love about the guy? I feel like,
so good.
I feel like from a distance, it's really funny. But I feel like if he was like the Hogs coach, we would get sick of it probably like around like week seven. Like if he gets like a really bad loss and like, okay, this isn't funny anymore, you know?
Good point.
No, I wouldn't change him out. Whenever the job was open before we got Chad Morris, I was really hoping for Mike Leach, but I mean, it's an exciting offense, but I don't know. I feel like he would get old. Like I thought Brett Bielema was funny at first too, but I mean, and for a little while, but that got old too. So,
That's a good point. It's like for where he's been and where he's gone, it's like there hasn't been a lot of pressure for him to win, and his personality can kind of fit in and be quirky and cool, and you know, you kind of embrace him. But yeah, you're right. At Arkansas, if he were the coach, he would get. I could totally see the fan base kind of turning on him and his quirkiness quick if things didn't go well. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. All right, next guy. And this is probably one that's more of a me thing. I think others don't see the appeal here. But Les Miles, now at Kansas.
That's the one I was thinking of. Ooh. Exactly. Yes, 100%. I want Les Miles.
Oh,
it's insane. I know it's a terrible take. And I know, like, everyone thinks – you know, Les Miles was successful because of the athletes that he got in Louisiana, whatever else. But, I mean, his record speaks for itself. He makes a lot of bad decisions in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, call me crazy, but I take Les.
I think I would,
That's
too.
Funny. That was exactly the name that immediately popped in my head when you brought this up.
And it's so ironic that Jeff Long hired him at Kansas. You know, like, you never know. All right, I got two more coaches for you. So next, and I can't remember his nickname, so you'll have to remind me, but Lane Kiffin.
No, immediate no. I mean, everything he went through from Tennessee to USC to Oakland, Alabama to FAU, wherever he's at now, I mean, that guy's just he's a train wreck. So I feel like after Bobby Petrino, I want to stay as far away from those type of people as I can.
I'm pretty sure it's the Bobby Petrino fans who want to bring Bobby back. They are the ones that love Lane Kiffin. He's the exact person they want. It's so weird.
Yes.
What was the name that he used? Like, was it on Tinder?
Joey Freshwater.
One more time.
Joey Freshwater?
Joey Freshwater. Goodness.
Something like that. Something Freshwater. Yeah, that story's fascinating. I hope there's a 30 for 30 on that one day.
I guess you have to be ESPN Plus subscriber to see it now. But all right, hey. So last coach.
Waste some money.
And I am pretty sure I know the answer here, but Jason Brown.
No, absolutely not. I couldn't even get through the full second season. That guy, just painful. I mean, just... You thought Bobby Petrino was a dirtbag, like, you know, all the media members. That guy's just awful. Like, ugh. And I know coaches aren't like saints by any means, but that was painful to watch.
All right. So if I wrote that all down, it seems like Mike Norvell, 100%, Les Miles, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Between those two,
yep.
who would be your direct replacement if you could choose?
I mean, Les Miles. He was I know it's stupid.
Les,
like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, Norvell would be great too, but for some reason, and I know Les is older, but yeah, I just have a good feeling about him. I don't know why.
You feel like he's still got those Louisiana recruiting type. Like, I still feel like high school kids.
Yeah.
Like, he's very likable. He's funny. He's kind of got that, you know, he just has that leadership quality. I guess it didn't work out at LSU. I thought it was weird that they fired him when they did, but I know he couldn't get over. He couldn't beat Nick Saban, which was his problem, but I don't think they got anybody better now, so whatever. I'm with you, actually, on the Les Miles. All right, so moving on to your money lines or your spreads, your point spreads from last week.
Oh, yes.
Didn't do too hot, and hey, it was your first week. I'm going to kind of give you a mulligan there, give you a pass, because it definitely was sprung upon you, but – you know, if I'll put it this way, the, you know, the lines update over, you know, as the game gets closer and closer. So with the updated lines, you would have beaten Vegas in one of the four games, but when at the time of recording, you actually didn't beat Vegas in any of the games for the point spreads. But that's okay. I think I'm going to give you a good chance this week to maybe redeem yourself. And you know, hey, you're new to this, so it's to be expected. But I think, I don't know. We'll just keep it going and see how it goes.
I'm good with that.
All right.
So I'm good with that.
First game we're going to do, big game, very big game, probably the biggest or second biggest game of the week. We're going to do Texas A&M.
Arkansas Ole Miss.
No. I don't want to do that one because I know you know the spread for that one, most likely. You've probably seen it.
I do.
So these other ones I feel like you could probably avoid.
Nope. No clue.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. So Texas A&M at Clemson. So let me fill in some gaps just so you know more about it. So right now, Texas A&M's ranked number 12. Clemson's ranked number 1. And the game is obviously at Clemson, Saturday, 2:30 p.m.
Okay, all important things. The spread that I would set, not knowing what it's set at now, I think I learned my lesson last week with Clemson. A&M, you know, Jimbo Fisher, he's a winner. But at the same time, like, let's go. Clemson minus 21. They're just going to blow them out. Blowout, Tommy.
Clemson minus 21. Very good pick. Very in line with Vegas. Vegas currently has it Clemson minus 18.5. So actually.
Okay. I want bigger.
Yeah, you went a little bit bigger. And, hey, yeah, we'll see. It could happen. You know, I don't think Trevor Lawrence had a great game, even with them, like, destroying Georgia Tech. And so Trevor Lawrence might really be out to prove people to prove how great he is this game. We'll see. I did copy this down because I just thought it was funny. So, you know, ESPN always does its matchup predictions or projections to see who wins or whatever. So this game right now, ESPN has an 87.5% prediction that Clemson's going to win. 87.5, so...
Where does that number come from, even?
Who knows? I don't. ESPN. ESPN, my, ESPN computer servers, for sure. All right, next game. This one should be a great game. I'm excited about it. LSU at Texas. LSU, number 6. Texas, number 10.
Two teams that I don't care much for, Tommy. So it's just kind of like the inner Chaz having a hard time with this one. Just because it's Texas, give me – it's at Texas, right?
It's at Texas, yep.
Okay. Give me LSU minus 19 just because I hate Texas.
I love it. Man, that would be so awesome if that happens. I'm so excited about that. You are a little bit more extreme than Vegas, I'll be honest. LSU – they have LSU at -5.5. You're going extreme here, and I like it.
I'm good with that.
All right, next game. So this one – it just sounds interesting to me. We'll see what happens. I think, well, never mind. I shouldn't say that. So the game is West Virginia, Power 5, you know, respectable school, right?
Yeah.
At Mizzou, Hillbillies. Or Missouri, as I like to call them.
Missouri.
It's an 11 a.m. kickoff, if that matters.
Give me, I don't like Missouri, and it's not because they're a rival. I just don't like them. I don't want to be associated with Missouri. They lost to Wyoming because they're chumps. Mm-hmm. And West Virginia, give me West Virginia minus 25. Blow them out. I'm feeling a little wild this week.
All right, West Virginia minus 25. That's a statement right there. That is definitely your most extreme spread so far. They currently have it at Mizzou minus 14. So West Virginia at minus 25 is a pretty big gap there.
I feel like you're trying to trigger me with these Texas throwing Missouri at me. So
I like it. I'm a big fan of that one. All right, man. If that is true, it's going to be so sweet. Oh man, that would be so good because. Doesn't really matter for Mizzou because they can't make a bowl game. So, all right, two more games. BYU at Tennessee.
Whoa.
It's 6 p.m. Tennessee. Kickoff. So, you know, there you go.
Give me Tennessee minus three. I mean, they'll bounce back from that embarrassing loss, but they'll get them a W. There's too much talent on that team, but it won't be pretty. But they'll get the W.
Yeah, interesting game because, you know, BYU just lost to their rival, I guess, Utah. Or at least, I don't know if it's a rival, whatever. But both teams are 0-1, so seems to be a fairly big game. I don't know. I don't know if Tennessee can pull it together. It's really funny watching Tennessee's fans react to the loss. They're all very rational. They're just like,
really?
Yeah, players are
surprised. Players
don't want to win. Coaches are not pushing the players. Jim Chaney's back calling plays for Tennessee. I just found that out. I hadn't realized that.
Whoa.
So good luck there.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yep. So
can I change that to Tennessee -1 after that? I didn't know Chaney was calling plays.
Yes, you can. I will change that. Tennessee -1. I didn't tell you the Vegas line. They have Tennessee -3.5.
Oh.
So
maybe they didn't take into account the Jim Chaney thing, I just found out.
I doubt it. ESPN, the projector or whatever thing they call it, has Tennessee winning 72.9%. So I don't know. We'll see. If they lose this game, man, stuff's going to burn. Let's see. Okay, last game. And this one I really think is just your chance to beat Vegas. I really do.
Okay.
Because this is a hard one, though. It's not easy. It's not an easy projection.
Give me a softball.
But it's just a wild card. Like, you don't know. New Mexico State at Alabama, who's number 2.
Oh, okay.
Let me give you a little info here. So it's a 3 p.m. kickoff. All right, let's see. Last week, New Mexico State, in case you didn't know, I know that's a small team. You probably weren't paying attention to them. They lost to Mike Leach's Washington State team 7-58 last week. So New Mexico State, you know, looking for the rebound against Bama. And let's see. And New Mexico State is actually getting $1.7 million from Bama for this game. So I don't know if that factors into the point spread here, but that 1.7 might. That's why I wanted to make sure you knew.
Give me Bama -50. Bloodbath.
All right. I like it. Bama -50. The line from Vegas is actually Bama -54. So you think it's going to be a slightly tighter, which if it is, you beat them. So we'll see. I like it.
54?
Yeah, I saw that line and I was like, You have to be crazy to bet on that game. I'm sorry, but it's hard to score. I would stay away from that completely.
Insane.
Well, all right, Chad. Any parting words about Ole Miss, about the Hogs, anything you want to say?
You know, we got to see more on offense. I'm hoping for the best. I'm not jumping ship yet on Ben Hicks. He can get it going. Just, he didn't turn the ball over, so that's a positive, I guess. We'll see. Hopefully, just get some points scored. I'm not hoping it's not 6-3 this week, but I got high hopes still. I think it'll be a good game.
Feels like
something always crazy happens against Ole Miss.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It feels like the type of game that's just gonna be 50 or 60 points, but I don't even have confidence that we can get there. It just feels like it probably will somehow.
I have no idea. I still, we still don't know anything about this team yet, so
nope.
We'll figure it out.
I do know Cheyenne O'Grady should be playing, or CJ O'Grady, whatever he goes by now, so that should help some things. We'll see. Who knows? We really don't know.
Yep.
Well, all right, Chad. Appreciate your time today, man. You have a great first day back at work. Remember your passwords, and whoop pig.
All right, whoop pig.
Bye. And next up on the show, let's get into Arkansas news. And probably the biggest news post the Portland State game has been the very sad season-ending injury news for Dorian Gerald, our starting defensive end. There are some bright spots to the bad news, but he strained an artery in his neck, which is an extremely uncommon injury, I think, in football. I've definitely never heard of that happening before, and probably life-saving, the fact that that they could get him the treatment he needs, and because I think this could cause blood clots and a lot of other problems. So it's really good that they caught this. It seems very weird. Probably the good news, he is missing this season, but he does have a red shirt available, so he should be playing next year, which will be great for our defensive line, which will need some older senior leadership. Obviously, you'd much rather him be playing this year. He showed some nice spark even at the beginning of the Portland State game, getting a near sack just, I think, on one of the first plays of the game, and you could just tell he was gearing himself up for a monster season. So we just wish him fast recovery, full recovery, and even next year for something even better, gain strength, all the good stuff. And he will certainly be a leader next year on our much younger defensive line without Sosa Aguim and a few other older key seniors there on that line. We also have Jamario Bell coming back, who will be his direct replacement, who's a senior guy. So that's nice that we have him. But after that, our defensive ends, experience-wise and age-wise, really go down quickly. You know, after that, it's pretty much freshmen that we'd be playing. And they are very talented freshmen, but with freshmen comes mental mistakes and lapses in judgment, and it's always good to get them experience, though. So, again, we all know that we're not going undefeated this year. We know it's going to be a very wishy-washy kind of team. So, you know, this is the type of year that building that depth and getting some of those younger guys some experience is always good. On positive note, we gained two commitments from high school football recruits, which is always amazing. One very big-time commitment from Darren Turner. Out of Memphis, Memphis Central there, and this guy rated a four-star, consensus four-star recruit, top, for sure, top 200 type of kid in the country. Apparently, Arkansas is recruiting him both as a receiver and a safety. He could play both. He's 6'2 and a half, weighs just north of 200 pounds. He's kind of one of those guys that, you know, from what I can read on different websites, has a lot of raw talent that can develop one way or the other. He's got a frame that he can build muscle on. He can be a rangy safety and really show his talent there. I actually think that might be where Arkansas is leaning at the moment to play him. We have a lot of wide receiver talent at the moment. I think that would be our hole that he could fill. But regardless, I think this pickup for Arkansas was really important. I think that he was a staff effort player that many coaches reached out to. And for this 2020 recruiting class, you can tell that they really are hammering home and really putting a lot of emphasis in Memphis. There's a lot of good players that are considering us there. They seem like they are a close-knit group of guys, meaning they Darren Turner, he knew Eric Gregory on the team and Shamar Nash, and I think that really influenced his decision to come to the Razorbacks. And there's a few other top recruits that we are still going after in the Memphis area. And those other really highly rated recruits are Bryson Eason, who's also who is a linebacker in Memphis, and as well as Omari Thomas, who's a defensive tackle. Both of those guys are four-star guys, and would be really, really big for Arkansas to land in this recruiting class. So we still have some big names still left on the board for us. Hopefully we can land those guys. The other commitment that broke on Sunday was a kid named Catrell Wallace out of Bryant, Arkansas. He's an outside linebacker. He's listed as 6'5", 210, so very, very tall for an outside linebacker. Not quite as highly rated as Darren Turner. You know, he's kind of about, you know, top 500, top 600 type of national recruit. He's a nice three-star player for a lot of the recruiting websites. Again, it's always good to get these guys from the state of Arkansas. They just bring a certain passion for the Hogs, and they get it. And I think that adding more of those guys always adds intangibles to the team, which is important. So I would always rather have a kid from Arkansas than, you know, a relatively equally talented or skilled kid from another state. It's important to get the good Arkansas players to commit to Arkansas. And I think, you know, Catrell Wallace, he could certainly grow into a starting role, probably likely will. We're definitely bringing in a lot of linebackers, which is good. I think that Chief is doing a good job showing recruits what he can do on defense, and I can already tell that the defense is looking fun. You know, there's a lot of blitzing going on already for Portland State. We'll see if he continues, but I'm excited for Catrell Wallace and this 2020 recruiting class. You know, it's going okay. It's not great. It's not earth shattering, but if a few guys commit that Arkansas is really going after, it could be another really, really good class for us. I want to give a shout out on the show to a couple people in the audience who have recently kind of reached out to me. Actually, one ran into at a playground here in town. So go follow at MLCole84, MLCOLE84. Cool guy. Had a nice talk with him on a playground here in Spring Hill. Definitely a huge Arkansas fan. Go follow that guy. I also had someone reach out via text to the phone line I have in my bio, which is 615-392-0107, which you can text or call and leave a voicemail anytime you want. And give us some feedback about some of his thoughts from the game on Saturday. And here's what he said. His name is Andy from Memphis. And he said, here's what he has to think about Morris after the game. Morris should be run out of town on a rail back to Dallas. That would at least get him back with his family. Should have hired Mike Norvell from Memphis. Definitely think he's got a valid point. Mike Norvell seems to have the program kind of on the up and up. Later on, Andy DM'd me on Twitter and basically said the reason he believes that we should have hired Norvell was because at the time we could have, you know, obviously realistically hired him, and he had the best win-loss record and he wanted the job, which I think are very valid points. I think Mike Norvell and Chad Morris will be two guys that you can compare and contrast into the future and really make the call if we made the right hire there. You know, of course, we all wish that Chad Morris is the guy. I'm sure we'd all love it if he's successful, but Mike Norvell seems to have Memphis going in the right direction, and I would bet money that he's going to jump ship soon to another program, and we'll see if it works out for him there. And that's all that I have for Arkansas News. So in our next segment, we will transition into the famous Arkansan of the Week.
Hello.
Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Hey, pretty good.
Good, good.
What's going on?
Not much. Welcome to the Hard to Be Humble podcast. Thanks for joining in today.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right. You're going to help me out. I have a special segment today for the famous Arkansan of the Week. We are going with Bigfoot, and I know that you are an expert, in my opinion, on Bigfoot. So tell me a little bit about your experience with Bigfoot. Tell me if you believe in Bigfoot. What's going on? What's your history there with him?
Well, I've always loved Bigfoot ever since they came out with the video of him back in all the late 60s. They call it the Patty video. And it was still the most, undisputed evidence that Bigfoot exists. They had him walking right across the track there, and of course the horse was a little jumpy, but they smoothed it out later with some technology. But yeah, it's just pretty doggone for sure for me.
Awesome. Okay, so have you actually been down to Falk, Arkansas? Have you checked it out? You know, have you seen any tracks?
Oh yeah, down in Falk, Arkansas, close to Texarkana, I spent a night down there one time. Me and a buddy decided to hike in as far as you could go, looking for the Boggy Creek monster down there. That they actually made two or three movies about it back in the early 70s. You get a chance to see though the Legend of Boggy Creek. It was a pretty good movie, but it was all based on a true story, you know. And I believe it, but we hiked in the middle of the summer, fought a lot of bugs at night. And we took our guitars with us, and we set out some peanut butter licks on the trees and stuff. And we had some really amazing things happen that night. We stayed up all night talking and playing the guitar, and had some really weird stuff happen. Smelled some really, really weird stuff. It was no doubt they were there. He was watching in on us for sure.
Gotcha. So he was just kind of shy. Well, first off, is it multiple Bigfoot in Arkansas, or how many do you think were there with you that night?
Well, I'm confident that there's multiple Bigfoots in Arkansas. Now there's going to be more, you know, in the more swampy areas, or maybe some of the higher elevations around Fayetteville and such. But they've even seen a lot of track over on the eastern side, close to the Mississippi River. So it's obvious that they do migrate, you know, up and down seasonally, going north and going south. So they come through periodically. But yeah, there's probably, you know, a few dozen of them for sure, from all the sightings that we have in Arkansas.
Okay. And so what are some of the best ways, you know, if you're outside, you know, it seems like they kind of keep to themselves. They kind of watch. Obviously, they like peanut butter. I didn't know that. What are some, do they make sounds in the night? What do they do? What's their behavior like? How can you know if there might be one near you in the woods?
Well, first of all, the easiest way to see them is from a distance from their eye shine. And it's easier to see them at night than in the daytime, actually, because their eyes are so big and round. It's typically a bluish white in color, very distinct. No other animal in the woods has that color. It shines back. And of course, they usually have two eyes looking at you about a foot apart.
I know you said you were playing guitar. Could you tell if there was like a song that you played that they liked a little bit more?
They typically like Southern rock, you know, the old Skinner stuff, pretty much is what they like. But, you know, it's just whatever you can pick or strum on a guitar. They're not real picky. And one of the things that they like to do is if you have a good ear for music and you can play halfway decent, they'll actually bring their youngsters up and, you know, bring them up there with them. And
okay, what's the plural of Bigfoot? Is it Bigfoots or Big Feet?
We just call them Bigfoots, you know. I don't know if it's Big Feet because it's more like Bigfoot. You got the skunk apes down in Florida and Alabama. It seems like the further south you go, the stinkier and smaller they get. And the further north you go, the bigger and, you know, more, yeah, I don't know, robust. I don't know. They're just kind of like elk versus white-tailed deer. They're just everything bigger up north for some reason. Like when I was up in Iowa, you know, it wasn't uncommon at all to see a, you know, a 20-foot Bigfoot up there. I mean, they'd walk right up it 20-foot tall, you know. I actually had a friend who had him come up to his back porch and hang out in the jacuzzi with him on the back porch. But anyway, they're not quite that big down here in Arkansas, but they make up for it with speed. They can really get up and go when they need to run. They can flat go. It reminds me of the Razorbacks when they take off.
Yeah.
Right.
So do they run on two legs or four?
It's on two legs. And they have, they don't have an arch in their feet. Obviously it's a flat foot kind of, and then they have a mid tarsal break. You might've heard of that. It's kind of like where our arch is in our foot. It doesn't bend, but in their feet it does bend. So they can really springboard off of that mid-tarsal break, and nice. That's why they can run and stride so fast. I often wondered some kind of offensive line that kind of mimicked some of the way that they sprint, you know, and crouch and sprint. And I'm not real big on coaching football, but it seems like if you had, you know, a way to take off from the line, you could flat get downfield pretty quick. I know they can save money on cleats. You know, they wouldn't have to wear cleats. They could just grow their toenails out real long, and that would serve the purpose.
So as far as movies or, you know, I know that we've got the Legend of Boggy Creek there. That's a pretty good movie, you said. But I think of like Harry and the Hendersons. I think of the Jack Link's Beef Jerky, Feed Your Wild Side commercials. I also think of Game of Thrones with like the really big, if you watch that show, like the big giants from the north, you know, they're kind of just bigger guys. You know, do you think any of those were pretty good representations of what they actually look like, or were they just nuts with those?
Well, they've started doing a good job in Hollywood with Harry and the Hendersons. That was pretty close, but they actually, and I saw this in an article somewhere, but they actually got a real Bigfoot to sign a contract for Jack Lynx. And that is actually a real Bigfoot in those commercials.
Gotcha.
It was kind of hard to get him to sign because they had to, you know, make him figure out how to put an X, you know, on a piece of paper. But that is actually a real Bigfoot in those commercials. And it took a long time to train him into doing exactly what they wanted. They worked really hard on those commercials. On it. My hat is off to those producers on Jack Lynx. That was pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll never watch those commercials the same anymore. Those are good stuff. So yeah, they you know, they have to really unleash the wild side of the Bigfoots in those. So I can imagine, you know, they probably want to be pretty shy. You know, they've been tamed or pushed back by humans for so long that I'm sure that getting them out of their comfort shell is tough. So, yeah. Well, cool stuff. Well, thanks for sharing with us about, you know, your experience with Bigfoot. I'm really glad that Arkansas can kind of share an important story in the Bigfoot legacy. And that's why we are highlighting Bigfoot as the famous Arkansan of the week. And thanks so much for joining me, Dad. I appreciate it. And I'll talk to you later. Have a great week.
Yes, son. I really appreciate your show you're putting on. I've been listening to it every week.
Well, that's all that I have for you today. Thanks so much for listening. The Hogs have a big game against Ole Miss this upcoming Saturday. It's going to be, I just have a feeling it's going to be a lot of points scored, hopefully at least. Really good game. A lot of intriguing storylines in it. I think that it's kind of crazy how we mirror Ole Miss quite a bit team-wise. For instance, Benito Jones, a really good defensive tackle, you know, five-star type of guy, was the exact same age, exact same class as Sosa Aguim, our five-star defensive tackle guy. That's just one taste of how similar these two teams are, and it should be a great game. I'm excited to see. Hopefully, Arkansas's more experienced quarterback, more long-tenured offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, coaches will kind of play a big key in this game. We'll see, you know, which team can gel, which team can put it together first. So y'all enjoy that game this weekend. And before I leave today, I do have one final message that I want to leave to all you amazing fans out there. As Mac Davis taught us so long ago, it can be really hard to be humble, especially when you're an Arkansas Razorback fan. Thanks so much. Y'all have a great week. Go Hogs.